Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Brian Lynn, and Christopher Jones Cruz. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and John Russell will have this week's Education Report. First, here is Mario Ritter.
Hillary Clinton is making history as the first woman to become the presumptive nominee for president of one of the two major political parties in the United States. The Associated Press reported that Clinton has the 2,383 delegates needed for the Democratic presidential nomination. The former Secretary of State reached the total with support from superdelegates in addition to pledged delegates won from the primary elections. Clinton expressed caution Monday night. She said that while media delegate counts show her close to an unprecedented moment, she continues to campaign for every vote. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders released a statement saying the media was rushing to declare Clinton the winner too soon. The senator's comments came after a phone call with President Barack Obama. The president has stayed out of the Democratic primary, but he plans to endorse Clinton this week. The president intends certainly through the fall, if not earlier, to engage in this campaign, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said. That's an opportunity the president relishes. In 2008, Clinton battled Obama for the Democratic nomination. In an emotional speech to concede the race, she said that she was unable to shatter that highest, hardest glass ceiling. John Hudak is with the Brookings Institute research organization. He told VOA the importance of the moment might be lost since Clinton has been expected to win the Democratic race. It's ironic that the moment in history where a woman becomes the nominee is almost seen as what was supposed to happen, he said. Republican presumptive nominee Donald Trump had an increase in support in opinion polls after his final rival dropped out. Hudak said he expects Clinton to see the same lift. Since February 1st, the process of choosing the next U.S. president has mainly involved voters who are registered members of the Democratic or Republican parties. However, the candidates will need to appeal to all voters in the November 8th presidential election. Hudak said both Clinton and Trump have made a mistake in not listening to certain groups. He said they must now find out what moderates want in their next president. I think with Trump, he's effectively communicated with many groups, but we've seen over the past couple of weeks he needs to transition toward working with moderate Republicans, working with establishment Republicans, and he's not doing that, Hudak said. About Clinton, Hudak said, she really failed to listen to anger and discontent within the Democratic Party at the outset. And so, when this uprising of support for Sanders happened, it sort of caught the Clinton campaign off guard. Trump and Clinton have already aimed criticism at each other. Hudak said that is not expected to change before Election Day. Between the fiery attitudes from both candidates so far, the increased use in social media in this campaign, and, frankly, media's addiction to the fighting between the candidates, Hudak said, you're not going to see the lull that we've seen in previous years. I'm Mario Ritter.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump said his comment about a federal judge was misconstrued as an attack against people of Mexican heritage. The presumptive Republican nominee issued a statement after criticism from both Republicans and Democrats. He added that while this lawsuit should have been dismissed, it is now scheduled for trial in November. I do not intend to comment on this matter any further. Trump has repeatedly said U.S. District Court Judge Gonzalo Curiel cannot rule fairly in the case because of his Mexican heritage. People who paid money to take real estate courses at Trump University are suing Trump for fraud. They claim they did not receive the education they paid for and have demanded their money back. The billionaire real estate developer denies the fraud allegations. He says many Trump University customers were happy with the classes they paid for and gave the program positive reviews. Trump says Curiel has a conflict of interest in the case because the judge's parents were born in Mexico. The candidate has called Curiel a Mexican, even though he was born and raised in the Midwestern U.S. state of Indiana. Trump has explained that Curiel is biased against him because of his proposal to build a wall along the Mexico-U.S. border to stop illegal immigration. He has also said that if elected, he would begin to deport millions of illegal immigrants. Trump has called on Curiel to withdraw from the case so that another judge can take over. Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan said Tuesday he absolutely disavows Trump's unacceptable remarks about the judge. He asked Trump to reject the comments. Republican Senator Ben Sasse from Nebraska tweeted his opposition to Trump's views, saying someone can't do a specific job because of his or her race is the literal definition of racism, Sasse said. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press he could not disagree more with what Trump said. Two of Trump's former rivals in the presidential race, Ohio Governor John Kasich and Florida Senator Marco Rubio, were also critical. Kasich tweeted that Trump was flat-out wrong and urged him to apologize to Judge Curiel and try to unite this country. Rubio agreed. There shouldn't be any sort of ethnicity, religious, or racial tests for what kind of judges should hear what kinds of cases, he said. It's wrong, and I hope he stops. On the Democratic side, Congressman Philemon Vela wrote an open letter criticizing Trump's ignorant anti-immigrant opinions. He said the candidate's statements on a border wall and his attacks on Curiel are just plain despicable. Trump stepped up his verbal attacks on Curiel after the judge ordered the release of sealed documents relating to the Trump University case. I'm Brian Lynn.
More than 20 North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, member states began a large military training exercise Tuesday. The exercise is part of efforts by the alliance to show interest in Central and Eastern European countries. Many of those countries are concerned about Russia's actions in Ukraine. The Russian government condemned the NATO operation early Tuesday. Russian officials said the exercises do not help to build a feeling of trust and security in Europe. Tensions between Russia and the West are higher than they have been since the end of the Soviet Union. Though Russia opposes NATO expansion into the former Soviet states, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has said that the Cold War is history, and we want it to stay that way. Poland is leading the 10-day-long exercises, which NATO officials are calling Anaconda 16. They will involve 31,000 troops, 3,000 vehicles, 105 aircraft, and 12 Navy ships. A total of 24 nations are taking part, according to the U.S. Army. The Anaconda military exercise is an exercise which aims to test the capabilities of the alliance member states to defend the territory of the eastern flank of the alliance, said Poland's defense minister Antoni Macierewicz. The NATO forces will practice a nighttime attack by helicopters, bridge-building operations, and air defense. Other training includes a chemical decontamination exercise and safely removing a large number of injured individuals. U.S. Army Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Mark Milley says the U.S. has a single purpose in the operation. That goal is to demonstrate that we are shoulder to shoulder with the Polish people, he said. We are shoulder to shoulder with the Polish army, and we are shoulder to shoulder with NATO to ensure that all of the countries of NATO remain free and independent.
In June 1966, U.S. Senator Robert F. Kennedy visited South Africa and made what some historians believe was his best speech ever.
Each time a man stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope. And crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance.
50 years later, his words are still remembered. Recently, members of the Kennedy family traveled to South Africa to mark the anniversary of the speech. In 1966, the country was living under apartheid, a social system in which whites had more political and economic rights than other races. At the time, it seemed as if South Africa's racial separation policies would never end. Robert Kennedy's 4-day visit raised hopes that apartheid might end someday. Kennedy went to South Africa less than 3 years after the murder of his brother, John F. Kennedy, the 35th president. In 1968, the senator hoped to become president. But but he was shot and killed by a gunman after winning the Democratic Party's presidential primary in California. Carrie Kennedy is a human rights activist and Robert Kennedy's daughter. She says that while race relations have improved in both the U.S. and in South Africa, changes took place because the two countries were forced to make them.
All those changes took place not because governments wanted them to. Governments tried to stop them, and not because militaries wanted them to. Militaries tried to stop them, and not because huge multinational corporations wanted them to. Multinational corporations tried to stop them, including South Africa. All those changes took place because small groups of determined people harnessed the dream of freedom and made it come true. That's what creates change.
Kennedy spoke to a gathering at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. Many in the crowd were young South Africans who have expressed anger about corruption and their political leaders. Millions of South Africans say they have yet to experience the economic equality they were promised when apartheid ended 20 years ago. Carrie Kennedy said that when times are dark, one thing always shines through: hope. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Even Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg is not safe from cyber attackers. Zuckerberg's Twitter, LinkedIn, and Pinterest profiles were briefly hacked over the weekend. His Facebook and Instagram accounts were not involved, Facebook officials said. A group calling itself Armine Team said it attacked the three accounts on Sunday, according to the website TechCrunch. The accounts were quickly restored. Twitter says a Twitter account used by the hackers to post messages was suspended. A website called Engadget captured messages posted by the hackers to Zuckerberg's personal Twitter account. "We are just testing your security," said one message posted by the hackers to the billionaire's Twitter profile. Zuckerberg had not posted anything to his Twitter account since 2012. Business networking site LinkedIn confirmed Monday that the Facebook founder's data was compromised, the New York Times reported. The company said the hackers attempted to create a false profile for Zuckerberg. "We were alerted of this takeover attempt and have taken action to remove the false profile on LinkedIn," said a statement the newspaper reported. The hackers also posted what they claimed was the password used for Zuckerberg's LinkedIn account. But LinkedIn did not say if the attacks on Zuckerberg's social media accounts were part of a large data breach at the company in 2012. That leak of emails and passwords affected more than 100 million LinkedIn accounts. Internet security experts suggest that users change their passwords often to keep accounts safe. They also warn users not to use the same passwords for different social media accounts. I'm Brian Lynn.
This is what's trending today. Brittany worked in rescue efforts in New York City after the 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center. Brittany died on Monday. She was 16 years old. Brittany was a golden retriever. She helped to search for survivors and recover human remains from the wreckage of the World Trade Center. Over 2,500 people were killed when terrorists flew airplanes into the Twin Towers. The World Trade Center was Brittany's first deployment. She was only 2 years old at the time. Denise Corliss was the dog's handler. She cared for Brittany. They worked together in the area known as Ground Zero for 10 days. The dog also worked at other disasters, including three major hurricanes. Brittany retired from active duty at age 9. According to Texas A&M University, the dog continued working in Texas as an ambassador with the local fire department. She also visited people who were sick and children in Learn to Read programs. The university oversees a search and rescue program. A member of the team that worked with Brittany says she took her job seriously, but was always ready to help others get a belly rub or have a treat. On Monday, on her way to see a doctor, Brittany walked past a group of firefighters and rescue workers who gave her one final salute. One news report called her a four-legged hero. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
For VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. Developing ideas in writing is the greatest problem that students face, says Bobby Cruchin. She serves as a lecturer in the American Language Program at Columbia University in New York City. Students, she says, can learn language rules, vocabulary words, and even how to structure essays. Learning how to develop ideas in writing is what proves most difficult for them. When Cruchin talks about the development of ideas in writing, she is referring to critical thinking, the ability to think clearly and form a judgment. Writing, she says, shows how a person thinks. Students who have not learned to think critically often have a hard time developing ideas in writing. Schools and employers put a high value on critical thinking skills. The importance of critical thinking shows up on standardized tests, such as the SAT, with its critical reading and writing and language sections. Such tests measure how well students understand arguments, judge information, and make inferences. These skills are very important for success not only in school, but also in the workplace. Diane F. Halpern is a professor of psychology emerita at Claremont McKenna College in California. She writes that critical thinking is an important skill to develop in life. Critical thinking is using the skills or strategies that are most likely to lead to a desired outcome. It is the sort of thinking we should be engaging in when deciding what and whom to believe, which of two job offers to accept, or whether vaccinations really do cause autism. Halpern adds that critical thinking is a skill that is important in the modern job market. Those who care about the future for today's children understand that the jobs of the future will require the ability to think critically, So let's be sure that our students are ready for college, careers, and citizenship by including deliberate instruction in critical thinking. It is probably the most difficult topic to teach and learn, but it is also the most important. Bobby Cruchin of Columbia agrees that critical thinking is hard to teach and difficult to learn. She says that students can overcome grammar and vocabulary problems. Developing an original idea, then supporting it, is what students find difficult.
Sometimes the writer might think, oh, I have the topic sentence, I have the supporting details, but there is no depth of thought. How do you really analyze and interpret and explain all these ideas? You can take care of the grammar, you can take care of the vocabulary, you can take care of the format, but the depth of development is the critical thinking part of writing is, I think, the greatest issue that any domestic or international student faces. It's not articles, it's not conjunctions, because these are all teachable things and these are all learnable things, and critical thinking is also teachable and students are able to learn, but it's harder to teach and to learn.
So, if learning critical thinking is difficult, what can you do? Cruchin suggests that students can start improving their writing and critical thinking skills by reading. Students, however, should not read without a goal in mind. Students should be active readers by studying how other writers build their arguments. In other words, they should consider the critical thinking of each author they have read. Cruchin says that students should consider the writing of an author by asking a few simple questions while reading.
How is the content organized here? How is the writer connecting these ideas? Look at the quote that the writer used. What comes after this quote? Does the writer just leave it as is or analyzes and adds his or her own idea?
The goal of this exercise, Cruchin says, is for students to develop the ability to understand how others think. In addition, it helps students to discover the critical thinking resources that they have inside themselves.
Because writing is thinking, is a reflection of how somebody thinks. So it's the constant exercise of thinking, seeing how other authors think and then training the students to. I don't think we teach critical thinking. It's almost a way to see that to get the students to see inside and see that they do think critically. We all have opinions. We all have judgments. But how do we voice them in an academic form? It's an exercise in already using the resources that already exist within the students. I don't believe they're less intelligent. Some may not be as well trained in this discourse.
The next time you are reading a book or an opinion piece in a newspaper, try to ask yourself some of the following questions. What is the argument that the writer is making? What evidence does the writer use? How does the writer present their ideas? How is the writer connecting their ideas? How does the writer evaluate information? Asking these questions will give you a point to start understanding how other people think. It will also help you to think about how you can write better and practice your critical thinking skills, too. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.